Ever wanted to know what it takes to become a successful trader? Alex shares his journey to becoming a trader and interviews successful traders along the way to help you. You're listening to Be the Trader.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the show. I just want to remind you that I'm also on YouTube, and you can find me at just the letter B, Be the Story, or Be the Trader. You should be able to find me that way. Be sure to subscribe and comment below, as I like to interact with each and every one of you. And another side note, I actually just partnered with Cobra Trader. They're my broker. You guys know this if you've been watching my show. And I love them because of borrows, easy borrows. And you get a really sweet deal and discount if you use my code. Just basically tell them you heard from Be the Trader or Be the Story or Alex Bustos. And it does help me out, and I appreciate that, but I wouldn't be suggesting them if I didn't use them myself, which I do. So without further ado, let's get it started. Welcome back, everybody, to Be the Trader. Today, I have a very special segment. If you're watching on YouTube, if you don't know, we're also on YouTube here. Check us out, Be the Trader, Be the Story. But if you're watching today, you know today I have two special guests, Dux and Tim Grittani. Guys, welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks, Alex. Good to be back.
It's awesome to have y'all, and you know, I'm excited to, you know, to kind of just talk about how things have been since the last time we've had you on the show for both of y'all, and kind of where we're all headed today in the month of August and what we expect to see in the future. So if you want to start off, Katana, just kind of share us with how things have been since the last time you've been on the show.
Yeah, sure. So I can't even remember what month that was now, honestly. Like, I've just got like fried brain going.
It was like
on,
a month and a half ago.
Okay. I mean, I know June was like by far best month of my career, which was really cool. Big milestone month for me. But July, I think I was just fried, honestly. Like, I was just like really mentally tired, and it was like an okay first couple of weeks, but towards the end, like, it was just like, it felt like every day I was just like missing opportunity after opportunity, and like nothing all that bad was happening to me, but it just was frustrating. Because, you know, I talk to guys like Dux who are like just killing it, and then I'm like, oh, why am I not? But then like right when I decided to go on vacation, I tweeted about this a bit, and I'll tell the story really quick. But the first day of the Kodak move, I was short 20,000 shares. I'm covering up 30 minutes before close because I'm kind of tired. It's perking. I'm frustrated. You know, it's going to be like a 6K gain or something like that. So I think at least that I get my position to flat, and then I just like bolt. I'm like, I'm out of here. And like, go walk the beach. I'm checking my phone. I'm seeing that it's gapping up after hours because of Trump. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess, you know, even though it was into a perk, not that bad of a cover, I guess. You know, talk to my wife about it that night. Next morning, sleep in, don't open anything, you know, check Kodak again, see it's getting even crazier. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll open up my broker, even though I was planning on, you know, taking a vacation now. And like, sit at my desk for 10 or 15 minutes and then look at my positions tab, and I've still got 5K Kodak from like $9. So, and at this point, it's $30. So, you know, I sat and stared at it through like a volatility halt or two, just being like, what is going on? And then finally ate it at 40. So, you know, nice start to a little vacation there. But I think it was 157 was the loss when all was said and done. But, you know, honestly, like, it did not make me nearly as mad or tilted as my stubborn losses do. It's just ridiculous.
Because it was just like an honest mistake. Kind of.
Yeah, I just can't believe it happened. Like, you know, like, so many things aligned. Like, I'm first of all, I'm taking a vacation, which I almost never do. I leave a position open, which I almost never do. And then it's a black swan. So, you know, just everything aligned perfectly.
That's crazy. And, you know, before we move on with Dux and where things have been, I'm very curious on July, because was July the month where we had a lot of movers just crap out all pre-market? Like, a lot of them all crap out like early pre-market too. Like, it wasn't like close to the open. And I think Dux, you and I talked about that, because I was getting super frustrated that I was missing out on all my pre-market, all these early pre-market plays. That's what was happening to me in July. Like, I had a good July, but like, I was missing so much, and I was like so frustrated.
I think for the current market, it's either a hit or miss. Either you hit the play or you don't play at all. So if you don't see it and you miss it, I never trade in pre-market because, you know, things can easily gap through resistance and there's nothing you can do. You don't know how far it can spike, very low liquidity as well. That's why I tend to avoid them pretty much all the time. If they just gap down and get rejected, well, pretty much a couple thousand bucks going to a waste on the boroughs. But yes, I did miss, I think, about 8 or 9. I think there's a lot of tickers that just crashed in pre-market. So on the boroughs, I think I took like 25,000 loss in total, but I don't think it's a big deal. So
I'm still getting used to that boroughs of like, I'm at a point now where I talked to you the other day too, and I was just about how I'm just borrowing and getting more used to just not using them. Like, cause like that happened all July, and that's one of the hardest things that I think people don't talk about in short selling. Like when you borrow and that feeling you get that you like, sometimes you feel like you need to use them in some way.
Yeah. And
I think it was cool that you said earlier, we didn't talk about this on the show yet, but how you mentioned sometimes it needs to help with that is size in real, real small just to make the borrows back. Is that something that you still kind of do, or even though you took 25K in borrows?
Honestly, I don't really care. If I hit something that's, you know, fits my play, I make about 200-300K. So that's only one play. Can cover 10 plays of borrows, so I don't really mind. But used to back in the days that I really hate borrow fees were really expensive. I think was about 6 to 7 months ago, Tracer was ridiculous on the borrow. So that's why I tend to size it a little bit small. But nowadays, I just don't really do it. Sometimes I do if the borrow gets like $2 a share, then yeah.
I mean, you kind of get to a point where you just accept it's a cost of doing business, right?
Yeah.
That's I'm getting to that point. It's hard to get to, but I'm getting to that point.
Yeah. I feel like ducks, like you and me, we wind up in like really similar plays a lot. But the one thing that you are good at that I don't do much of is those like day one shorts. And those are a lot of your big wins, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. And and the one of the biggest runners. I just don't share something.
We talk most days, I feel like. And usually like we're doing StarCraft, so I'm distracted, but like, I know you get some like sick risk reward on that, but like, are you also really high win rate on those early day ones, or is it kind of more like 50-50, but the wins just massively cover the losses?
I would say about 65, and wins can massively cover the losses. Yes.
Okay.
I trade the same. I don't know what you trade per se, but I always, that's the majority of my trades, or the day one gap and craps. That's probably about 90% of my trades. And I love them. I love them a lot. But Dux warns me on pre-market, which I don't normally trade pre-market, but like I've been trading pre-market the past like, but usually within like the first 20 minutes right before the open, like when it's close to the open. But not pre-market, like, you know, an hour before the open, because there's so much erratic. Because by 20 minutes before the open, and it has like already rotated its float, there's a lot of volume. I kind of see the pattern, I give myself wide risk, right? Because you, like you said, ducks, like it can easily blow. I mean, at the open, it's probably going to blow through high a day more than likely. So like, I kind of got that in mind and size with that in mind and add if it's part of the plan. So
are you guys like really focused on what those big chat rooms with all the followers are doing on those plays?
I don't.
Or you just kind of ignore it?
I actually heard it from one of our people in chat. He was pumping something. I was shorting at it at the same time. So I just sized in while he's pushing it. So
yeah.
I don't pay attention to any of that. I mean, I don't log on to any chat room at all anything at all, Twitter or anything. I just, because if I do, I'm easily influenced. So you were talking to me, Gritani or Dux, and Dux says, dude, I wouldn't do that. I would eat me. Okay, cool. Let me get up. So I don't talk to nobody. I just stay lone wolf pretty much. I was curious, so Gritani, when you mentioned the beginning, did you intentionally hold those shares? I thought I was out. Okay.
I thought I was completely done. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Holy crap.
That happens to me like once in a while, but you know, usually I catch it within like 5 or 10 minutes.
Wait. So I'm very curious on just some things that got me thinking this month. It's been slowing down a lot lately. The month's been slowing down. I feel like it's been slowing, and that's when things, I don't know about you guys, but my history for, you know, I'm recently compared to y'all consistent. And so a lot of things that happened to me back in the day, that when things slow down, I tend to take a little bit more like risky plays because there's not as much. So I'll like take more losses, if you will, or unnecessary losses. And then when the time heats back up, you kind of might be gun shy. You know what I'm saying? You ever been in that cycle when you first started where it's like it slows down, so you kind of get like loosey goosey and then you lose a little bit. And then when the market picks back up, you're kind of gun shy because if you kind of took some losses. Anything y'all have ever experienced something like that?
I'm definitely – go ahead, Ducks.
You go ahead.
I've gone through that for sure. And I've also done it at times with size where because things are slow, I'm really forcing stuff because I still want to like have a good month, you know. I think that in the last year, it's probably shifted to more of the opposite where I've gotten so good at sitting on my hands that when things do start to heat up again, I'm almost rusty. So I feel like the last time it was slow was like maybe last October. Like it's been like that long that the markets just seemed crazy to me. So I remember though that like November, December, when we had like the first big squeezer, like I think I lost like 50 or 60K on the front side of it, just like, you know, taking hit after hit after hit. Cause you know, I just was maybe a little over aggressive cause I was excited there was something to play again. But just also a little bit like, wait a minute, something's running. Like what, this is different. And then I adjusted and things got easy again, but it, it's just always something.
What about you, Doug? So were you going to say something earlier?
Oh yeah. So, I used to do the same thing pretty much, 2 years ago. And my perspective on it is there's a cycle in the market that every time it slows down, somebody is going to make the first mistakes. If they start to make the first mistakes, they basically put in the money in the market. That's where you can take advantage of it. So I got so used to that. I'm just patient because I can see the market slowing down and I can see they're about to make the mistakes. I know what ticker is it too. Every time I see that, I'm not actually excited, but like I'm looking forward for the opportunity that they create. So that
I think
makes
I get
me
what
not,
you're saying.
Yeah. That makes
like
me kind of
like you're talking about like how like, you know, like we'll have like all these like one day stocks that just die on day one. And yeah. Like they'll strain shorts and develop bad habits. And
yep.
I agree with that completely.
like today, what was it? It was, well, it did end up dying in the day, but it was some
MBOT?
Ticker. What was it?
MBOT.
Yeah. I think that was the one, or is it? I think that
LODE.
Was yeah, load. That was the one. Yeah, that was the one where it just like it looked like it might have died, but then it came all the way back. And we're starting to get some more. Like I see what you're saying. Like the psychology of the market, where people are getting used to this one way. That now it could once it starts shifting, we're gonna start to get the opposite, like those big squeezes, and we're gonna get those other patterns that we all like, right? The over those big overextension, those Kodaks. Those are pretty much.
What we're right.
That's pretty much what we're going to start getting. So, I'm talking about that. I probably brought this up to both of y'all before independently, but I'm just curious, just throwing it out there. I interviewed this guy just the other day named John Locke. He's from S&B Capital and he's some options trader or he still is an options trader. So the whole idea of like the market changing, right? Like change. Do you feel like there's some truth all the way in that and some not so true, like as in like are you guys, I feel like the patterns pretty much have stayed the same but there has been little changes within the pattern, so I'm just curious, just throwing it out there, like what are your opinions on, like are you still pretty much trading the same way or is it like things have completely changed for you where you're like, man, I don't even trade any of the stuff I used to trade?
I feel like I'm trading a lot of the same stuff. It's more just when we talk about the market having that change, it is, for me, it's mostly a change in number of opportunities where I'll go from having, you know, like more trades than I can handle in a day to like, okay, maybe there's like two or three really good opportunities this week and that's it. Like, and that's like we touched on earlier, that's when it turns into the battle of like, okay, sit on my hands, don't force stuff.
That makes sense. What about you, Ducks?
It's more about volume. In different market conditions, that there's different average volume. Average volume we've been getting in the morning is around 15 to 20 about a year ago. Now we're getting around anywhere between 50 to 70 before it gets into the afternoon. So if you can adapt into that volume and sizing correctly, I don't think anything changed. The only thing is changing is, I think, the average volume. That's pretty much it.
Cool. It's cool to hear that. It's cool to hear that from both of y'all, because I personally kind of feel the same way you guys both feel. Like, things aren't really, just like the number of opportunities and like the volume in terms of like the volume's changed dramatically lately. It's just ridiculous. But like, you kind of get used to it, right? Like, you kind of like, okay, this is the new norm for now. And talking about sitting on your hands, Ducks, you're really good at that. You're really good just sitting on your hands and just waiting. I know, Gratana, you say you're getting even better at it. I've gotten really good at this as well, where, you know, I'm just trying to ask this question next to really get reinforced of why I should be doing this. And that is, I have this idea of, if I just only wait for the best patterns, then I can basically, I trade for 3-to-1 minimum. That's just how I trade. And so if I wait for the best patterns, then overall, long term, if I only trade 3 times in 1 week, because there's only 3 plays this week for some odd reason, and I win on one, well, I'm profitable for the week, and I keep that up, I'm going to be profitable for the year and so forth. Were y'all both, I don't know about Gratana, I don't know if you've always been that way, but do you feel like what's really helped you kind of solidify, hey, patience, like wait for the best setups? And if you want to be that way and you're not really that way, but you're working towards that, what's the challenge for you to be that way?
I think it was something I actually learned really early in my career, like back when I was still like a $1,500 positions, because, you know, I lost my first $1,500 because I wanted to trade everything. You know, I had as many brokers open as possible so I could have as many day trades per week as possible. It was like, try to trade 8-10 different patterns, and I just bled myself out. And as I went full time, you know, started 2012 and had to like kind of really embrace the grind. And had the realization along the way, back then it was all about, you know, buying the major promoters and getting them in upon announcement and, you know, 50% spikes in 5 minutes and stuff like that. And I kind of came to realize with those, I was like, you know what, like, this is the bulk of my gains, like each month. Like, I just need 2 promos to be released every month. And if I just wait for those, like, that can make my month. So just be ready for those opportunities and everything else. Like, yeah, if there's something great, trade it. But those are the ones that matter. So that kind of took a lot of pressure off in my mind, where it was just like, just trust that those couple big trades a month will be there and just be ready to strike when they appear.
And Doug, same thing pretty much, or?
Pretty much the same thing. I think back in the days, I always go back and look at my account statements and go through the trade that, is it really worth it to place those trades that can really affect my gains? The answer is no. So I just really be super selective and trying to pick up the right trade. Pretty much when you look at your accounts, you will know what you should do and what you shouldn't do.
When it comes to,
I mean, when we first started talking, Ducks, like, it really surprised me, like, how little you actually traded.
Yeah, I don't trade that much. Yeah.
Has it always been that way? I mean, go ahead and expand on that.
It's not always been that way, but I used to trade like the first green day, second green day. Now all those are 50-50. Either I get massive gains or I get like pretty much a similar loss. So if you trade about 100 times and the net gains 0. And I waste all these times trying to trade the same pattern, and by the end of the day, I get 0 gains. That's why I turn into a super selective person. After that, I would rather put all of my concentrations and just study the super detail of the pattern and get the size really big and get the massive gains.
Were you just looking at account statements to figure that out, or did you also track this all on spreadsheets?
Oh, yeah, pretty much all on spreadsheets and account statements as well, yeah.
Spreadsheets. You literally make me want to get better at that.
I think he's probably even more into the data than I am.
Oh, I bet you're right. Oh, he has to be. Yeah, I'm curious on whenever you select your patterns, right? Like, this can go for both. I'm just very curious, like, when you're only trading, like, one thing that's challenging for me is I only trade, like, I say like three patterns probably, but it's really just like two big picture moves. But like there's so many ways to trade it, right? But like what I'm asking is, over time, you'll start to pick up a new kind of trend, how we talked about earlier, how you were like, hey, everything's just crapping out at the open. Well, sometimes you'll start to see a new little, you know, maybe midday perks that all start to happen midday, and they all just like squeeze all the shorts. When you start to notice those things, do you guys quickly adapt and say, you know what, here are my patterns that I trade, but I'm noticing this right here that's happening this month, I jump on that? Like, do you think that way, or where are you guys at on those?
I jump on it in the sense that I'll start tracking. I'll notice something new and I'll say, well, let's get this into a spreadsheet. And if I can backtest it, I'll backtest it and try to get old data too. But I wanna see something in a spreadsheet that makes me feel confident that it's not all in my head and there's actual data to support it. And once I start to see that, then I usually probably dive in a little too fast with size, but like rather than, you know, dipping a toe in the water first. But step one for me is usually try to throw it into a spreadsheet and see if I can make something out of it.
And you, Dex?
I have pretty much a lot of experience with those type of trend. And I try to adapt into it back in the days. Nowadays, completely zero attempt from me. Because when I look at something that's doing something weird, and I'll ask myself, okay, well, do I already know this? Am I familiar with this? If I don't know it, I just, okay, well, I'll take my loss. I'm leaving. Then I'll come back, find, you know, my best pattern. That's pretty much been my style since this year.
So do you just totally stay in your lane, or are you like, do you still try to learn new setups at all? Or are you just like, I've got my playbook and I'm good?
I'm still tracking new stuff, but everything pretty much laying the same thing. Nothing has changed pretty much in terms of how much it will drop, how much it will spike. It just the volume changed. You have to size into like specific volume keys to get your size, like 200,000 shares. But other than that, everything pretty much stayed the same.
When did volume become important for you guys when it comes to size? Like, at what point were you like, oh, I got to pay attention? Because, you know, when you're trading, when you're becoming consistent, and you were, you know, had your $1,500 account, like you really didn't have to worry about like, oh, is my size going to be, you know, can I get in and get out easily? Like at what point were you like, shit, I got to kind of adjust and adapt? Because there might be people who listen to this who are getting there and they're not sure like how to do that. And they're starting to struggle, right? So can you explain that? Because I'm curious, really.
I think for me, it was because I traded almost all OTCs for the first couple of years of my career. And I was, from the start, I was thinking ahead, like, you know, because there's so many OTCs that are so illiquid. And I mean, you can usually just even see it if you just look at a 1 minute chart. There's all these weird gaps in the chart, or like, you know, one print per minute, stuff like that, like lots of white lines that do nothing. I guess for me, it was thinking ahead, like, you know, okay, great, I could have something that works now, like with my tiny account, but then what happens when my account starts to grow? If I can't take that next step up in size, then I'm just stuck, you know, making very little every month and there's no opportunity for growth. Mm-hmm. So I guess I got the idea of volume being important in my head, like from the start. And I don't think I pay as much attention to it with the listed stocks as Dux does. You know, like, of course I still have like my minimum, like I want it to be liquid enough to trade and feel like I can take size. But you know, like even hearing you talk about some of the volume stats, Dux, like, you know, the average volume per month, like a year ago compared to today, that is like, I haven't looked at anything like that. And, I have questions where I'm like, oh man, it'd be interesting to like pick Dux's brain right now.
And right.
Okay. So I look at it in two ways. First of all, is there enough liquidity for me to size in 200,000, 300,000 shares to make 300K? And I have digged very deep on that there is only limited amount of money you can make with how much you can size in, depending on how much volume is there. So back in the days, I think I found out the volume anywhere before it starts to fade, average volume can be traded on the day is around 40 to 50 million. And when they hit that 30% volume, you will start to decrease. Now, whenever No, the priority is the pattern has to be there. So the volume will be anywhere between 15 to 20 million. And when I see that volume hitting close to that 15 to 20 million, that's where I jump into the key that has some type of spike. So we'll neutralize that candle and dump it down. Nowadays, we have close to 100 to 120 million with the potential of spiking to 400 million, but you can see it coming. So by reading that, you will know with this type of gap and crab, that crabbed in the pre-market and they want to come back and spike into the pre-market resistance.
Yeah.
First of all, you have in your head that, okay, well, the entire day potential is 100 million to 120 million. And it's already hitting the pre-market resistance. It's only traded about 10 million. So for me, I will not short that because I know the potential that has to hit 30% to match the perfect criteria for me to short into that pre-market resistance, which is the 30% of the entire day. It has to trade anywhere between 30 to 40 million. Hitting that 30%, then you have to trap enough. That's the enough level to trap enough backholder for it to dump. Mm-hmm. So if it hits 10 million, well, now you know backholders in there. So if I size it in, that's one of the mistakes I see a lot of the short sellers that are sizing into the pre-market and instantly get squeezed. And you can see one of those outliers. You can find these type of examples that can straight bust through the resistance because it didn't reach that specific level. It's been working out super well, I think. You have to use all of the method that lines up to be able to size it in.
I think me and Tanya are both really impressed right now.
it's just interesting to hear you.
Yeah, it's really cool how you think.
Well, and so we both like to track different things, and I get asked a lot about like, oh, how do I track data? Like, what should I track? What things? Like, your mind with that went somewhere that my mind never would have. Which, like, you know, that's why I always tell people like, there's no right or wrong way, and like, don't follow my formula because people are trying to like mimic exactly how I track. They would never think of that. Like, it's just really interesting. Like, all the different ways you can go with data and ways you can use it.
How'd you think of volume? It's funny because it's like I see what you're saying 100%, and it's really cool to hear you say this because I've never heard of this specific. So like I knew you thought about volume a lot. I knew you always talked about that in your DVD. I mean, I've seen that. So like, but I never thought of it in the way you just explained it. And so it's very cool to see like what got you to start tracking that way, you know, or did you just always, you know what I'm saying? What got you thinking that way? I'm just very curious.
I don't know. My mind's like a very, I'm everywhere because because when I think of stuff, I don't connect stuff. I think, okay, well, this one and something else, like completely different. So one of those days, like, oh, this might be very interesting to track. And one of the other things I found out is the volume traction in the morning. The more volume it tracks, the more liquidity will lose, especially in the afternoon. And it has to fit a specific pattern. If the volume potential majority lands in the morning, the stock will drop about, 75%, 80% from the top. If it didn't trap enough volume in the majority in the morning, doesn't reach the volume potential, it will drop about 50%. Then we will have that weird consolidation and might be perk again and testing the morning high. So I think at one point I got so tired of these type of like gap and crap and consolidate and re-spike again, mm-hmm. I will start focusing on the volume. And finally, I found a solution for that. So that's one of the methods I use. But
so when you started doing that, give me an idea because before you saw that, you were trading probably almost every day, right? And then now you're probably like, let us know, like, did it dramatically decrease the amount of trades that you take now because of that tracking?
Not really, because there's so many opportunities. If we are in the same market last year, then pretty much a lot less. But this market, pretty much the same.
Like, at what point in your career did you have that aha moment with that, though? Like, was that really early, or was that like in the last couple of years?
Probably the last 2 years, because I was really trying to figure it out. Okay, well, I got a big enough account, and I can make much bigger gains. I just don't know how. And I need to dig in into some stats to find out, okay, this is how much you can size it in without break the pattern. That's one of the last 2 years.
So like maybe you would be trading less if it wasn't for like this on crack market we've had the past year.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, before you said, I mean, not in this chat, but like in a previous chat, I think you were saying you were trading like maybe 1 to 3 times a week if it was like a normal back in the day, like last year.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Because I talked to buddies of mine who think I'm crazy because I trade like maybe 5 times a week, like one trade a day at max. But like you're trading like way less. And it's like, or I mean, right now it's active. I get it. But like a normal... It's impressive. It's crazy. Yeah. So I think I know we're almost running out of time here. We're getting our little timer countdown right now. So we got about 5 more minutes before we gotta wrap this up, guys. I'm curious on just one other thing. I think we kind of talked about it just now, but the answer I think I asked the question the wrong way. And what I was trying to find out is in terms of what I was saying earlier, Gratani, about like your sizing, whenever you start to get to a certain size. Do you feel like, and this could be mean in experience, is there a certain size where you do have to, not in terms of worried about, does this trade have, you know, volume or not? Because most of the trades that we trade have volume, I mean, at least, you know, 4 or 5 million plus. But what I'm curious about is like, is there certain parts where, you know, you're used to entering and getting your size in every time, like real easy, no problem, because you're maybe trading 1,000 to 5,000 shares. But when you start to trade bigger lots, was there a certain number of lots or size that you kind of were like, okay, I have to be more strategic on how I size in, or like for Ducks, for instance, if he sizes in the way he does, he's going to completely gray out a candle and make it go down, you know? So like very curious. I mean, Ducks, you guys are trading way bigger now, but I'm saying, was there a point in your career where you're like, okay, now I got to pay attention to this. You know what I'm saying? Like, is there like a number size wise, like thousands of shares, 100, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I'm asking.
It's not a specific number for me. You know, it all relates back to the current stock that I'm trying to trade, whether it's listed or not. And what, you know, basically like kind of like what the average 1 minute volume is, I think is probably the way I think about it the most. Because what my mind always goes to when I'm thinking about my trading size is, what if things start to go horribly wrong and I want to get out like fast? Like, will I be able to? So I don't have like a specific formula or like percentage of the day's volume or anything like that where I'd say, okay, this is where I'm going to max out my position. Maybe I just do it automatically in my head. I don't know. But like it's just kind of been a by feel, looking at the chart, looking at the 1 minute volume and just trying to be smart, I guess, because I don't want to be in a spot where all of a sudden I can't get out when I need to.
That's what I'm talking about. You hit it on the head. Now I can clarify my question. You know how like we'll have stop areas where we get out our risk, but when I'm trading, you know, 2,000, 3,000 shares, it's easy to get out close to your risk if it busts through. But if you're trading 100,000 shares, Ducks, 200,000, 300,000 shares, how do you get out without all that slippage? Like that, I'm very curious about that.
I have this down into very, very, very so many sections. So I know how much and how many shares and how much dollar I was supposed to size in different flow zone, cap zone, like the flow between 1 to 2 million to the 3 million, 3 to 5 million, 5 to 10 million, and different cap are have correlated with that. So I have different sections. Let's say the market cap is under 100 million and the flow is under 2 million. That's one section. 100 million cap under, flow is 3 to 5 million. That's another section. So I dig in a lot of those statistics, and I have this sheet that I got in my head, that how much dollar I can size it in into this pattern if the volume reaches into this certain limit. There's a lot of stuff to go over, but once I figured out that one, I started tracking different market cap zones dollar limit. That was back in 2 years ago when I started. Then I figured out, okay, well, there is a maximum dollar can be traded in one day before it starts to lose its liquidity. Now that's also really into different zones, like the market cap under 100 million, market cap between 500 to 1 billion, 1 billion to 10 billion. And I think it's very interesting to track. Maybe Tim should do it as well. That when you see the pre-market volume, you can estimate the entire day volume, right? When you so if you have a volume in your head, mm-hmm. and you have the maximum dollar block can be traded in this day, right? You use the maximum dollar block that divide the potential volume can be traded in the entire day. You can figure out at what price the stock will start to drop. So before the market even started, I already know the market, at what price, at what time, at what volume it's going to drop. So
one question for you.
Yeah.
Give me one piece of the secret equation here. At what time pre-market are you casting your volume forecast?
All right. So it's the right now it's the pre-market volume times 4. That's the general equation.
All pre-market. So you do this at 9:30.
Yes, 9:30 times 4. That's when the stock goes straight flat, not move at all. That's called consolidations. Now, if it starts to drop, it will start to lose liquidity. Now, we'll divide by 2. It will start to spike, not sure. But if it's a multi-day runner, the current small cap that for $1 billion cap is anywhere between 2 to 3 billion. So small cap, 2 to 3 billion. And if the pre-market volume is, let's say, 10 million, right? 10 million times 4, that's 40 million volume estimated. You use 2 billion to 3 billion divided by 40 million. So the stock has to trade $50 on the consolidation level before it drops. So once the stock trade about $50 and consolidated for a while, that's where you set it in. So I use that on KODK.
So people are going to hate me right now because I have to wrap this up because we're about to get kicked off. And oh, yeah. So look, I know the good times and when I continue this.
I have to watch this again.
yeah, me too. But thank you so much, Dux, Gratani, for being here today, guys. I appreciate both of you a lot. I respect you both a ton. And it's just a pleasure always having y'all on the show. Thanks.
It was a great time again. Thank you.
Thank you.